Jim McGuinness wrote in his book about, and I don't know whether he's changed on this, but as Colin McFadden reached to punch that ball to the back of the net, he didn't want it to happen because they hadn't played to their principles.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
Turning our attention to the second Lions versus Australia test from the Melbourne Cricket Ground, and we're delighted to say Will Genia is with us this morning to help us preview it. Will, how the hell are you?
I'm good, thanks guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
We are very excited to see what this Australia can do, because the version last week was not Australia's best. There's been some changes to the team. There's a much more hefty and beefed up pack. In your view, is that the right direction of travel for the team?
Yeah, I do like the selection of Willie Skelton coming back in and Bobby Valentini. I think if you look at the game, we got dominated physically, and it allowed the Lions to attack and play at a tempo and at a rhythm that we couldn't stick with. And we were fortunate, I think, to only lose by the 8 points. I think they left the two or three clear-cut tries out there. So, you know, the challenging thing about guys like Willie Skelton coming back and Bobby coming back is that they haven't played a lot of footy. So, but then if you look on the flip side, I thought we had a really good second half. So if we can say to those boys, look, you just come in and rip in for the first 40, 45 minutes, give us a better platform, then maybe if we have the same second half that we did last week, we put ourselves with more of a chance to get a good result.
You've played in all sorts of teams with absolutely dominant packs, teams with packs that weren't as dominant, and you've come up against teams as good as this Lions side, including the Lions themselves. How is the changing room this week? What are the players saying to themselves where it was clear that they were dominated last week? How do you flip the script in such a short space of time?
Well, I think first thing, you just got to acknowledge the fact that you were beaten physically. You can't sit there in denial and say that we weren't dominated. And then you've got to have a sense of pride about yourself and the individuals within the shed and try to flip the script that way. You know, I think the worst thing that they can do is be lulled into this sense of security that, you know, we had a good second half, we just need to play well. It's more a case of we've got to take this personally, we've got to front up physically and give ourselves an opportunity to play on the advantage line, play over the advantage line, be competitive at the set piece. Because like some of the Lions, the rugby that the Lions played on Saturday, some of the best rugby that I've seen. Just their ability to dominate the game line, then with Finn Russell orchestrating and Jamison Gibson-Park orchestrating, playing both sides of the ruck, playing on top of the game line. We need to take that personally and really front up physically.
And is that the player's job? In like, obviously, the team gets prepared by the coaches and the coaching ticket and all the level of detail that you're supposed to. But ultimately, what you're talking about is the emotional battle of actually making sure that you take it personally. Who leads that, I suppose, is the question.
I think it's the player. Yeah, you could have the best game plan in the world, and if you don't go out there and not necessarily execute, but if you don't go out there, rugby is a collision sport. If you don't go out there and win those collisions, it doesn't matter what game plan that you have. It's about winning those collisions, giving yourself a platform to be able to launch some attack off. And likewise, on the other side of the ball, it's about making sure we don't give them such free play because they are dominating us physically. I really think that's where the game's won. You know, it's a simple game in the sense that it's about collisions. And if we can go out there and dominate those collisions, we give ourselves an opportunity to play, but we also minimize their opportunity to play. And the thing about the Lions is they haven't put under a whole lot of pressure over this series. You know, if we can put them under pressure, it'd be interesting to see how they respond.
Will, I was listening to before the first test, and you were saying whoever wins this first test wins the series. And I wonder, has your opinion slightly changed off the back of that first test, or do you still think that now it's done in favour of the Lions?
Oh, it's hard to say that it's done, but I still kind of stand by it because you just gain a lot of confidence in such a big series. And the one thing that if you look at the Lions, like they've made a couple of changes. It's such a luxury to make those changes and still bring in top quality players. You know, like to see Tuipulotu not in the team and Bundy Aki coming, like it's essentially a like for like, but Bundy's fresh. Mm. So you're getting a world-class player coming fresh. And so I still am a believer whether they win the second test and it's, or they win the third one and it's a decide. I'm not too sure, but it is, you know, I'm a stand by what I said. I do think it's hard being an Aussie because I want us to win, but yeah, I do stand by what I said. Yeah, unfortunately.
Because it does look like it's a strengthened Australian side heading into this second test with the return of Skelton and Valentini. And I think that last half hour in that first test, there's a lot to go by, that maybe the Lions' intensity dropped, but Australia did at times take advantage and ended the game well. They outscored the Lions in the second half. But it does lead me to wonder, Will, like what would have happened here had the preparation been different? Because we were talking about it at the start of the show today. Like, it seems to us that it was crazy that there was only one warm-up game beforehand, and that was against Fiji, and it was a 3-point victory. And I don't know if you feel the same, that preparation has been inadequate under Joe Smith.
Oh, that's a hard one, because I think 12 years ago, I played in the one 12 years ago. I don't think we played a test before the series. I think preparation, it obviously would help if we played more games, but I'm of the opinion that, like, we've had 12 years to prepare for it. You know, like, with, you know, the lead up to it around building combinations, the boys would have had plenty of camps throughout the year during Super Rugby, got together, spoke about how they wanted to play, the game style, the tactic, the game plan, all that type of stuff. I think for me, I hate saying it, but it's probably a bit of a cop out to say that. Because I think on the flip side, like the Lions, yeah, they've played a bunch of games together, but they're also at the back of a long season. You know, a lot of those boys have played a lot of rugby over the course of the last 12 months. And so they can, I thought that might count as something in our favour as well, but it obviously hasn't, you know, if that first test is anything to take into consideration. But no, I think the preparation, we've had adequate time. And it's more a case of just getting things right around the execution on game day, and getting things right around winning those collision battles. And it might sound like a bit harsh on the Wallabies, and I love the Wallabies. I bleed gold, but sometimes I think you've got to call a spade, and I think it's just more a case of the boys fronting up and executing.
And would that feeling be shared among the rugby union fraternity in Australia heading into the second test?
Well, that's a hard one, mate. I can't say I speak for the rugby union fraternity, but and I'm also in Japan, so I'm not on the ground. I was on the ground for the first test, but whether it is or it isn't, it's certainly what I think. You know, it's more a case, again, I think we've had adequate preparation. We were fortunate that we had a test match beforehand. It's just more a case of putting it together on the field. And I said earlier, I think that's a player's responsibility. I think they need to step up and really understand that it does come around once every 12 years. You're not going to get this again unless you're very lucky and you're a James Slipper or a George Smith. You're not going to get this again. So really, yeah, as players, really walk towards that pressure and embrace it and go out there and give it a proper go.
To the point about having 12 years to prepare, was it odd in that circumstance that so many eggs were in a different basket than Tom Lynagh, that actually he hadn't had the opportunity to play a 10 in advance of this properly in a test match of this standard? Or is that just one of those quirks where, you know, you develop as much depth as you possibly can? Injuries are a thing in rugby, we all know that, and so you can't be too critical of the fact that he was getting exposed at that level for the first time.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think when I say the 12 years of preparation, I kind of mean around, you know, the building of depth in certain positions. You know, I think since guys like Bernard Foley and Quade Cooper and you know, you guys, since those guys have moved on, we probably haven't had someone really stand up and own that number 10 position. You've had guys come in and out. You could probably say the same thing about the halfback position, where it's been Nick White, Tate McDermott, Jake Gordon. And Jake's probably established himself in the last sort of 12 months. But that's kind of what I mean as far as 12 years of preparation, you know, to be able to put in place and develop the depth of players and the depth of talent coming through. Yeah, and it is just an unfortunate situation as well when, yeah, Noah Lolisia, you'd imagine, would have been our number one 10 for the series, and he's injured now. He's out for the next 6 or 9 months. And you've just got to entrust someone like Tom Lynagh, I think his first test start and his fourth test, to get in there and have a go. And, I thought he handled himself well, and he'll be better for the experience in the second test. And I think he'll be better because he'll have a little bit more size in the pack, again, with guys like Bobby Valentini coming back and Will Skelton, and also with the experience that those guys bring as well.
What about the selection of Jake Gordon at 9 and Tate McDermott on the bench? We had Alan Quinlan on yesterday. He was in the Australian team hotel. Nick White was around. He'd apparently had a long conversation with Joe Smith. We were kind of adding two and two together and getting 22 that Nick White was going to be on the bench, but there's no room for him in the squad. Are you surprised by that, or is this the right combination of starter and sub?
I like this combination. You know, I love Nick White. He's a good man. I've played with him for a number of tests, but I think this is the right combination. I think Jake, to be fair to someone like Jake, I think he's been very, very good for the Wallabies the last 12 months. And he's a Joe Schmidt type of player where he's not necessarily someone like Tate where he's got individual brilliance within him, but he's solid. And his core roles and responsibilities, he executes at a high level consistently. And I think that's what you need to set the game up from the start. And then someone like Tate, we saw what he did in the last 20 odd minutes when he came on. He can bring that energy, bring that running game, bring that spark and create something from nothing. And so I like the combination. I like the way that it works. But it's an interesting one because I'm also on the other side. Because if you speak about someone like Tate being on the bench and the spark that he brings, why wouldn't you want to bring that spark and that attack from the start of the game? You know what I mean? And take it to the Lions. And so I like the combination of the both of them as it is, but I'd like to see Tate start, particularly because he's got the combination with Liner as well. They've been at the Reds for the last couple of years.
He was good when he came out as well in the first test, gets the try as well. I'm very interested to hear your thoughts on Jameson Gibson-Park and what makes him stand out. I can hear by your noise to start with that you're a big fan.
He's world class. I said I did a podcast I think maybe a couple of months ago, and I said he's the best halfback in the world. And the amount of abuse I cop from the French in my on my social media DMs. But to be fair, Dupont is injured, but he's exceptional. The thing that makes him so good is just his ability to have so much time on the ball. You know, that's what great players have, is they have time on the ball. They make the game slow down around them, and as such, they just make such good decisions. And watching him play live, I think it was the first time I'd watch him play live. I was at that test. It was exactly as it seems when you see it on TV. Just time on the ball, presence in the game, good execution of his core skills, great kicker of the ball, and just provides so much calm and direction. And I think the best players, to me, do the simple – the best players and the great players, I should say – do the simple things well and make the right decisions more often than not. And he's just such a, he epitomizes that. I love watching him play. He's my type of player. He might not be as, you know, dynamic and athletically gifted as someone like Dupont. And don't get me wrong, I need to clarify, Dupont is an all-time great. But I love watching someone like Gibson Park, again, who has time on the ball, has presence, plays with probably a bit more guile and skill because he doesn't have the athleticism of a Dupont. I'm a big fan of his. Big fan of his.
I know you're going to be asked about this plenty, and I already have been, but how do you envision this second test going?
I think with the team that we've picked, I'm hoping that we can match them physically in the first 40. And I really think that our chance of winning this game is just using the ball more. I think we kicked a bit too much in that first test. I'd like to see us open the game up and break the game up and allow the athletes in the team that we have, like Sueli'i and Ikitau and Tom Wright, to have time and space. I think if we play too structured and we play too much of a pragmatic game where it's too much about kicking, I think it plays too much into the hands of the line. So I'd love to see us match them physically in that first half with the team that we've picked, but also take advantage of turnover ball, take advantage of poor kicks, and rather than give the ball back to the Lions, have a go. Because I think if the Lions come out and dominate us physically again, like they did, I think they'll be better for the first test and they'll take advantage of the opportunities that they didn't in that first test and potentially put a score on us. But I'm going to back us to win a close one, maybe win by two, 17-15.
Classic. Well, I'm very interested in this. We've had loads of your contemporaries on, loads of the grandees of Australian rugby who fully understand exactly the precarious nature of the game at the moment in Australia. You've obviously had distance from and yet a very close connection to over the last number of years playing in Japan. So what's your assessment of just the situation the game finds itself in? Is it as dire as we keep being told?
In Australia, our sporting market is saturated. Like, we've got rugby league, we've got cricket, we've got AFL, and particularly NRL and the AFL, they're just huge, huge sports in our country. And because of the financial advantages that they have, they tend to take a lot of the best athletes in the country. So purely from a talent perspective and from a ability perspective, we're sort of behind the back foot immediately. And that obviously plays into the entertainment element where, you know, if you've got the best players, you've got the best athletes, it makes for a better product. I think in terms of the game within the country, like the Wallabies will always be fine because rugby is a global game. Where we struggle at the moment is the domestic competition. It is getting better. I mean, the TV ratings had certainly come up in the last, from this year to last year and years gone by. But we're still struggling, I think, to capture the live audience and people come out and watch the games in person at the stadiums. And so I think it's just a reflection of the sporting landscape in Australia that makes it difficult for us to get a foothold in that market.
And that's why this tour is so important. It's like an opportunity to gather the casual sports fan and unite them behind a team that hopefully beats the best of Europe.
Mate, absolutely. Like Aussies, we're super patriotic, but we also love winning teams. So if we were to win a series like this, it galvanizes the sporting community. And, you know, in my experience in the last one that we played in 2013 and having been there for the first test, when the Lions are in town, rugby is the number one sport in the country. And so we're very fortunate that we do have the opportunity and privilege for them to travel to Australia and play us because it does a lot for our code. But again, I think it's a reflection of the fact that the international game, the Wallabies will always be strong because it is a global game. There's always global interest. It's just a case of if we get a win or whether we don't win the series, whether we can capitalize on the momentum that's built, not just financially from the Lions coming, but the viewership and the interest in the game moving forward.
Is it true you yourself initially preferred cricket and rugby league, and it took a few years before you got into rugby union?
Mate, I loved that. I was a big cricket fan. So like when I was a kid growing up in Papua New Guinea, we couldn't play sports on Sundays because we used to go to church. So a lot of the times, I didn't know what rugby union was, didn't even know it existed as a game. Watched rugby league and cricket as a kid and just played a whole bunch of backyard cricket. Thought I'd be Brian Lara, but ended up being more like George Gregan.
Not bad.
Not bad, yeah. George is the man. So I was probably a poor man's George, but I'll take it.
Well, that's bad. Like, it ended up being like, you'll take it and then some, because you're playing three World Cups, including a World Cup final. But am I right in saying that the 2013 Lions tour was the highlight, certainly internationally, of all of your 110 caps?
Without a doubt. I've said that many times and people sort of scoff at me a bit, but there's just nothing like it, mate. Like the prestige, the tradition, the history, and just the interest in the game. Like I said, rugby becomes front and center of sport in Australia, which is a difficult thing to do, and it's because of the Lions series. And so I just remember the crowds, the people, the media, and Sydney in particular is a hard place to crack for rugby. And I remember on the morning of that decider, there was a big jersey, blow-up jersey on the Sydney Harbour of the Lions jersey and Wallaby jersey. I walked around town and everybody was in a Lions jersey. Everybody was in a Wallaby jersey. And I'd never experienced that in any other of my rugby experiences over the course of my career. I had goosebumps being at the game because it sort of brought back memories because there's nothing like it. There's honestly nothing like it.
It's saying something that 12 years on, you have that vivid emotional connection with that memory. Because you should never have been playing in that series. Like you, am I right in saying you do your ACL at the end of 2012?
Yeah.
You're only just back 4 weeks before the first test in 2013. And then the Guardian awards you 9 out of 10 in a test that Australia lose.
Yeah, mate, that was it. I did my ACL against the Springboks just at the end of the year. But I mean, like, it speaks to what it means. Like I was told I'd be back in 6 to 9 months. And I remember thinking, well, if I get back in 6 months, that means I'm 4 weeks out from the first test. And I did everything I possibly could to get back. Everything, like pushed everything in terms of my time frames and the pain and the hurt and all that type of stuff because I didn't want to miss it. I was fortunate enough to come back in time and you know, play somewhat of a decent game that first test. I've said it a million times. I just wish Kurt LeBeal didn't slip over. Might have been a bit different if he gets that kick the first test.
Is that is that mentioned around Kurt Lee or?
Yeah,
how do you deal with that?
I haven't seen KB in a while, but he's one of the best people you'll meet. Like you'd be able to say it to him and have a laugh, and you know he'd be fine with it, mate. Because he's been a match winner for us plenty of times before. Remember kicking 2010 against the Springboks. First time we'd won at altitude, I think in 30, 40, 50 years. So He's got the runs on the board.
Like, you'd easily forget how like seismic those first two tests were, because I know the third test Lions ended up winning comfortably enough, but the first test, like, Curtly Beale could have won it. The second test, you guys do win it by a point, and you're the last player to touch the ball.
Yeah. Mate, it's like, I look back on it with such pride, and I'm so honoured that I got to play, but it's also the biggest regret of my rugby career. I mean, yeah, I did get to play in a Rugby World Cup final. We lost against the All Blacks, but I felt that that series, and I don't mean to be disrespectful or arrogant, but I felt we should have won. And so there's so much, like, it's the one time I look back on my rugby career and I think, we should have done this, we should have done that. Why didn't we do this? Kick should have gone over, should have won studs, all that type of stuff, because it meant so much to me at the time, and it means so much to me now looking back. But yeah, the first test was incredibly close, obviously with KV missing that kick at the end. And then obviously we'd won the second test, and I caught the ball and kicked it out. And I remember just thinking, I didn't feel satisfaction or joy. I just felt so relieved that we'd have the opportunity to now potentially play for the trophy in the third test. And I remember going into that third test being quite flat, to tell you the truth, because so much emotion in that second test, so much energy gone into taking it to a decider. The Lions just came out roaring, you know, excuse the pun, but they came out roaring, and they were too good for us on that day.
Is there anything you could do now, if you could tap yourself on the shoulder at full time, to try and make yourself be less flat the next week?
I don't know. I think the Lions went to Noosa for that third week, so maybe go to Noosa or go to a beach or something. I can't remember what our week was like, but we were in Sydney. So what I think, if I look back, what I would have done was probably not been in Sydney for the entire week, probably been somewhere where we could isolate ourselves, get away, recharge, refocus. Because while it was an amazing thing to see rugby front and centre in Sydney, it also can be a bit overwhelming at times, and the pressure can sort of build, because everywhere you go, everyone's excited about the third test, everyone's excited about a potential series win. And so if I look back, that probably would be the one thing that I would do, is just go somewhere, remote, get away from it all, and just refresh and refocus.
Noosa is sensational.
Is it?
Yeah, it's so nice.
I haven't been.
But there were distractions as well, weren't there, on that tour? Because you had, was it the picture in Hungry Jack's, which we would know as Burger King, Curtly Beale and James O'Connor. But it wasn't that big of a deal, really, because you had the day off the next day, and that was totally blown out of proportion. And then James Harwell with the stamp on Alan Wynne-Jones. Like, he was a few years ahead of you in school, so he's probably one of your early heroes. And there was all this just crazy narratives throughout that tour in 2013.
Yeah, I think that was the one thing that probably took its emotional toll, particularly on James, but also I think the group. You know, he spent hours in the judiciary. I actually had a conversation with him just at the test recently, and spent hours in these waiting rooms for the hearing to come down. And you know, I think as a group, when you see that, like, your skipper and your leader is going through something like that, it definitely takes a toll on the group as well, because obviously he's the leader, he carries the energy, he carries the vibe. So that was an interesting narrative. I remember looking back at that, and the footage actually looks like he does it on purpose. And so I was thinking to myself, Jesus, he's done for like 6 weeks here. But, you know, Kevy, we call him Kevy. He doesn't have a bad bone in his body. So I'm glad that he was able to get off. And, yeah, mate, the Hungry Jacks story is a funny one. Like, I saw KB, Curtly, and actually James are in Melbourne at the moment now, and they took a photo together, but with KB's two kids. he posted it saying, well, not at Burger King this time. But, mate, that was a bit of a non-issue. Like, most teams that I've been a part of, like, you always have the Wednesday off. And so Tuesday night after a big training, boys hang out in their room, depending on what they like, play PlayStation, whatever it is, games until the morning, whatever. I think those boys just decided to go for a walk and happened to get snapped at Burger King. I didn't think too much of it.
It's great to hear that it meant so much to you, that tour. Like, obviously, because the result doesn't work out, but there are so many memories within. And I don't know, do you talk to your teammates from that tour a lot nowadays? And do they share your love of it, of what happened? Or did you feel that you loved it that little bit more than the rest?
I don't know. When I speak about it, I probably think I did, because I caught up with Amashi Cooper actually on at the Brisbane test, and we did the rounds, did some Q&As, and he was asked the same question, and he said that for him the biggest thing was World Cups. And he grew up wanting to be a world champion and win World Cups. And so he probably didn't at the time share the same sentiment that I did around the occasion. But what he did say was he didn't realize how big it was until the first test. He remembers after the national anthem, walking towards his position and just seeing the sea of red and the roar of the crowd. And I think at that then it dawned on him. But it differs for certain people. Like I just put so much focus on it because, again, the idea that it's every 12 years, I remember thinking, wow, this is going to be an incredible, something that you can tell your kids about, your grandkids about, regardless of the result, you were able to be a part of this. And, that's definitely how I think about it. But, as far as my other teammates, I don't know. I did speak to Adam on the weekend, and that was important what he felt about it.
Do you know that in this part of the world, there's a debate about whether or not Australia should be taken off the rotation?
You mean the end of season tour is the rotation?
No, for the Lions, that it's like, this is too easy for us.
Really?
We should go to France instead, or maybe Argentina. I don't know. Obviously, that has not crossed your radar yet.
No, well, we saw Ben Youngs have a bit to say, and we saw how that ended up. He said we shouldn't have even turned up to England, I think, and we ended up beating England. So, Australian rugby, like we want to win this second test, and if we can take it to a decider, that obviously puts a lot of that stuff to bed because then it is a series. It is a competitive series. But it just regardless of the result, we're just in the position that we are in terms of our team and the evolution of our team. Would we like to be better? Would we like to have a stronger domestic competition so that we are more competitive at the top level? For sure. But those sorts of things take time. You know, it's like Wales, for example. Should you say that Wales shouldn't be part of the Lions series because they have been terrible the last couple of years, right?
Steady on, Will. I don't know if you're familiar with our history with Wales is not good. And if you thought your DMs were bad after you said something about Antoine Dupont, wait until you make it to Wales Online.
I love the Welsh, trust me. I love the Welsh. It's my favourite place to play and travel. But, I just use that as an example because it's just teams go through cycles. There's an evolution of the game from a structural perspective, from an organisational perspective, and from the players on the field. Wales are obviously going through a tough time. You know, Australia, if you're being honest, is probably going through a tough time in terms of our player turnover and our development in the last couple of years. But, mate, we'll get there. We'll get there. And I wouldn't write us off, you know. If you're going to do that, like I said, let's write Wales off as well.
I have one last one. You're back in Japan. You said you had an emotional goodbye to Osaka on Instagram 7 weeks ago. So are you back now exclusively as a coach? Is that what's happening or what's your future in the game?
Well, I'd like to think I'm over here as a player coach. But a lot of it is mainly around doing some skills coaching over here. I still love playing, mate. Like I would love to keep playing. I still have that passion and drive for it. And I had a pretty decent season last season. So hopefully I can put the boots back on at some point. We'll see.
Where are we talking to you from today? What's behind you there?
I'm at the stadium, the Kintetsu Liner Stadium. We just had training this afternoon. So, just sitting outside in the heat, mate. It's about 38 degrees.
Oh, gee, really? This is the perfect calm down for you. So after training to talk with us, thanks so much for your time. You've been great.
No, I love chatting footy, man. So I appreciate you guys having me on.
Nice one.
Good stuff,
all the best.
Will. Cheers. Take care.